Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
UB political science professor Jacob Neuheisel joining us in studio this morning. Great to see you, Jacob.
Likewise. Thank you for having me on.
And your drive-in wasn't too bad, right?
Not at all.
Well, the House has now prepared two articles of impeachment against President Trump, and these include abuse of power and obstruction. What do you make of what they've come up with?
Well, I think this was strategic on their part. You know, there was a lot of speculation going in that they could have sort of relitigated the Mueller investigation, gone all the way back maybe to the beginning of the campaign. And so I think that this reflects the most that they could possibly get and keep their caucus together. They still might lose a couple going forward, but for the most part, I think Democrats are on board with these.
Hey, is this maybe the timeline that you expected these events to take place?
I wasn't really sure what to expect here. Frankly, I thought that they would stretch it out a little bit longer, but like I've been saying all along, there's some danger in that as well, because it is going to be seen as politicking and pure, you know, posturing in advance of the 2020 election. So I think they're moving a little bit more quickly than I expected, but again, anything was possible.
Did they scale it back, the Democrats? I mean, initially we were talking about bribery and a lot of other charges, and here we're looking at these two. What do you make of that?
I think they did scale it back. I think that was smart in terms of, you know, where the American public is right now, again, where their caucus is. So they need that to be unified. The only negative here is that when you see these unveiled, they don't really match the rhetoric that a lot of Democratic leaders have had the last couple weeks. And so I think that's going to leave a couple people scratching their heads.
Okay, so this announcement yesterday, I mean, one of these kind of groundbreaking things, it's happened only a couple times in American history. Yet you walk around, you talk to people, and the reaction is kind of like, yeah, whatever. For, you know, most people who, you know, aren't really involved or investing all their time in this. Now, I can't say if that was the case when this happened to Bill Clinton, or believe it or not, I wasn't around with Andrew Johnson, so I don't know if that was the case then. But what do you make of that reaction? How did we get to this point where this is such a thing that it was seen as such a monumental way to handle a president being treated like just some other news story?
Frankly, I'm guilty of that a little bit, too. I think I told some colleagues, you know, wake me up when there's a vote, because everything before that is posturing. I think that that's just what we expect of the political system now, and maybe that's sort of the long, inexorable slide we've taken since the Watergate hearings, right, since Nixon, where we expect everything to be overly political, and it really doesn't affect us all that much until it comes to a vote or it comes to something really big.
Well, was that the case with Bill Clinton? What can you maybe compare for us, you know, the reaction or the coverage, what it was like then compared to now?
I was around in 98. I was a good bit younger, but, I think that it was an occasion that we hadn't seen before, and so there was sort of a solemnity to it. But at the same time, there was a lot of talk still that it was political posturing on the part of Republicans. And I think that they paid the price for that in 98 when it's one of those few midterms where they saw the out-of-power party lose seats. And so I think the American public, for the most part, if you look at the polls, wasn't really on board with it then either. And I think the key similarity here is that the economy was pretty good and otherwise the country was doing pretty well, and people don't tend to pay attention to these kinds of things.
What about your students? How engaged, how interested or not are they in this?
Some of them are very much glued to it. I think that they're a relatively good cross-section of the public. You know, some are glued to it, some of them are 24-hour-a-day, you know, news junkies, and some of them really can't be bothered. They have other stuff going on. So I think it is a nice representative look at sort of the whole gamut that you see.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of those people who are paying attention to every little, turn, and amongst those people, they knew that this was going to happen, and they probably know what's going to happen a month or two from now. Is there something in that, you know, we kind of have an idea of exactly how this is going to end up that relates to that not caring as much?
I think that's certainly a part of it, and that's my sort of kind of shrugging my shoulders at this, which is pretty sure I can count. I know where the votes are going to be here. I might be off by a few here and there, but for the most part, I know how things are going to go on the House. The more interesting part is going to be what happens after that. I think Mitch McConnell has a big decision to make, which is, does he actually move forward at all? That would, of course, be the norm. That's what's happened historically, but he's been shown to break with that, such as, you know, when we look at the Merrick Garland nomination. So that's the big question in my mind.
You know, with so many folks in the country knowing or thinking they know what's going to happen, that this is not going to get out of the Senate, why are the Democrats really bothering?
Well, I mean, there's the cynical political science view, and then there's the less cynical, maybe moralistic view, which is they feel that this is something they need to do, they have to do to check a president who, in their view, has extended his power to an unreasonable length. The other part of me says it's pure politics, right? It's that what they can do at this time to weaken a president in advance of a re-election campaign.
Joining us live in studio, UB political science professor Jacob Neuheisel, talking about impeachment, everything that happened yesterday, and we're talking a little bit off the air about 2019 and 1998 and how much can happen in a little over 20 years and how different the world looks, how different we view impeachment. The one thing that kind of sticks with me is, you know, I'm thinking back to 1998 and I don't remember having cable in 1998. So the news was on like an hour every single day. And when this happened, it was dominating the headlines. So it was, of course, a big deal. If, you know, 40 minutes of your 1 hour of news is dominated by one thing, it's got to be a big deal. Now it's a 24-hour news site. You can turn on a channel and watch the news all day long. So maybe that changes perceptions a little bit. How does that change things this time around?
I think that's absolutely right about sort of the technological changes. I mean, cable was there, but it certainly wasn't as widespread. And so the really 24-hour news cycle that we've become familiar with in maybe the last decade wasn't quite there in the same form. And so I think what that allowed people to do is, if you're a news junkie, now you can watch it all the time. But those people's minds aren't really changing. Right? They basically had their mind made up before they turned the television on. There's another group who they consume a little bit, they get frustrated with it, and then, as you're saying, you know, they flip on football. And so that's what they watch for the remainder of the time. And so you get two groups of people, some who are super informed but ossified in their opinion, and some people who are totally checked out.
You know what's interesting? When you mentioned that if you were a news junkie in 1998, you had to go and seek out. You were probably reading 10 different places version of what was going on because you only got, you know, 30 minutes or an hour on TV. Then you had to read, you know, maybe there was two articles in the local newspaper, two in the New York Times, and then you're kind of going around to different, you know, you plug in your phone line to the computer and you read some website when that would load. But now you can just stay in one place and hear one version of events all day long.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, C-SPAN was out there, CNN was out there. Fox News may have been out there, but it wasn't in every market like it is now, or pretty much every market. So I think that just the technology and the march toward really what we see is this fragmentation of the media environment. You know, Fox News wasn't as big of a player. CNN wasn't as big of a player. I think that's really lent itself to the kind of opinion environment we see today.
You know, it's almost like an information overload today.
Absolutely.
Right?
You know, you need some way to stem the information tide. And an easy way to do that is you gravitate toward things that agree with you. And I think that what that lends itself to is that more coverage is not necessarily tracking with opinion change anymore like it used to.
Well, you know, speaking of that, so what'll have a bigger impact, do you think, on the 2020 race? Would it be these impeachment hearings or maybe the stock market? What are people more likely to see, you know, to drive that point?
You know, 2016 taught, I think, most people like me a very painful lesson, and that is to remind us that the fundamentals matter an awful lot. And so I think the stock market is by far going to be the bigger driving force than something like this.
Joining us live in studio, Jacob Neuheisel, UB political science professor. And Jacob, we've been talking about maybe attitudes toward impeachment, how much it's changed since the last time we went through this. I'm wondering what you think this might do to impeachment going forward, and if that might be the bigger issue here, because we kind of know what's going to happen in this case. We know what's going to happen, at least in the near term, with this president when it comes to this impeachment. But does this maybe change the bar for impeachment and make it less of that, you know, final straw, so to speak?
That's a great question. You know, impeachment has always been a political process. I mean, going back to the first impeachment the country experienced with Andrew Johnson, he wasn't well liked among Republicans at the time, and he was impeached for violating the Tenure of Office Act, which was later ruled unconstitutional. they had a reason for it, but it was basically about policy differences surrounding Reconstruction. And then you get to 1998 with Bill Clinton, and that was fairly politically divisive as well. So it's always been a political process in spite of sort of the warnings of the founders. And I'm not sure even at that time that the founding generation was all on board with it being a strictly about performance.
Things are so, I guess, tribal right now. Would you agree? I mean, each side sees exactly what they want to see and nothing else.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. And there's an awful lot of evidence for motivated reasoning. I mean, people can experience the same conversation and get different things out of it. They can see the same news program and get different things out of it. And so we've constructed our political realities in such a way that it's comfortable for us. And that's the world we walk around in.
We are breaking down impeachment and what we learned yesterday. Jacob Neuheisel, UB political science professor, joining us in studio. You know, we've been focusing kind of on the politics of it all and what the reaction has been. But still, you know, if you look at this, you take all of that away, this is a significant moment in American history, something that very rarely ever happens to a president and in Congress.
Absolutely. And it's useful to remind ourselves of that, that very rarely does it get to this point. Arguably, maybe it should have gotten to this point a couple different times. You know, the Reagan-Iran-Contra comes to mind. But for the most part, this is something that's not undertaken lightly. And it is sort of one of those key pivotal moments in American history.
But, you know, it seems to me that in the past, impeachment was a bipartisan effort. And it doesn't appear that that is now. Has the in that respect, has the bar been lowered?
I think that just reflects where polarization in the country is right now, where, as you were saying earlier, things are much more tribal, and it's about the team. It's not really about anything else. And, you know, look, I don't remember the exact breakdown, but for the most part, Democrats weren't too happy with the Clinton impeachment either. I think there were more defectors there, or we're likely to see fewer defectors this time around than we did then. But I think it's just been sort of a marked decline toward this kind of polarization.
Yeah, would you expect, you know, anyone to change their position now once we reach this point? It seems like everybody's pretty sure where they're going to end up, and there's not much more changing of the minds that's happening.
I really don't think so. I mean, the articles seem to have been constructed narrowly to get the most Democrats in the caucus on board. I think they might lose a handful of them, the sort of red district Republican or red district Democrats, but for the most part, they're unified in the House. The wild card here is what happens in the Senate. You know, what happens with someone like a Mitt Romney or Susan Collins. And so I don't think it's going to be the 20 votes that they're going to need to remove in the Senate, but it could be more interesting over there.
You know, if the vote does happen next week in the House, then it would move to the Senate. What would a trial be like in the Senate?
So traditionally, it does move to the Senate. A trial, you know, the legal analogy here, which I hasten to use because people think that there has to be a legal process here. Right? The impeachment is the indictment. The Senate trial is for removal. And so you're going to have the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court presiding. It's really a ceremonial role, but you will see the court have some measure of presence there. And you will see it acting much as you would a trial in a criminal case, where there are witnesses being called and, you know, questioned and that sort of affair.
And that, if maybe some of the testimony wasn't, you know, quite as interesting to you, that's maybe where the TV gets their money, so to speak, you know, and things really pick up.
I think that's true, and it's just going to be very different. We're in a period of divided government. It's going to be Republicans who are running the show, and so the same kinds of things that they saw happen on the House side with really Democrats ruling the roost, that's going to turn around in the Senate side.
You know, the Trump administration declined an opportunity to participate in the House hearings. Would they, do you think they would participate in the Senate hearings?
That's a great question. You know, that's been sort of the bluster all along, and I don't know if the president's lawyers would agree with that move either. And so I would think it'd be mostly led by surrogates on that side, but I could be wrong.
Okay. How does this impact what is going to happen in 2020? Because that is the big thing that a lot of people are pointing to who might not agree with impeachment going on. You know, we're so close to an election. The American people can maybe make that decision on their own once presented with all the evidence as they have been. How does this impact the people running in 2020 and just the process in general as we have expected it to play out? Maybe that has to change entirely.
That's a great question. You know, it's something you traditionally would think would have a big impact going into a race like that, but I really don't see it happening. Like I said, people are very steadfast in their beliefs surrounding this, and I don't know that it's changing that many minds.
And we haven't really seen a lot of the Democrats who are moving toward closer and closer to the 2020 goal in Iowa and New Hampshire. They haven't really been hammering home the impeachment part. They haven't been, focusing on that the way maybe some people would expect.
I think that's right. There's a danger there for them, which is, they don't want to be the anti-Trump candidate. I mean, they all are in the early debates. They sort of got that out. They all don't like Trump. But I think they need to differentiate themselves on other dimensions, and that needs to be policy dimensions.
Who is this better for a Senate trial going into the 2020 race right now?
It really depends on what shakes out there. So if Republicans are able to use their majority on that side to do some grandstanding, sort of shift the narrative, flip the script, then I think if that's the last thing in people's minds going into 2020, then they have a bit of an advantage. Of course, they're working from a deficit here where none of the stuff that came out of the House side was good for their brand. And so I think that maybe they could fight themselves back to a draw.
Is this the year, I'm wondering, that Iowa and New Hampshire just get overshadowed with the impeachment proceedings happening so close that maybe they don't have the influence that they've always had?
It really might be. I mean, it's been a long time coming. Iowa and New Hampshire are not representative of the American public, and it's not representative of the states to come in the primaries. And so there's been talk for a long time that that's an issue. And so, yeah, maybe this is the time.
Jacob, we appreciate the time this morning. Thanks so much. Jacob Neuheisel, professor of political science at the University at Buffalo.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.